Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Coming home to Wyoming, it still feels like an adventure. It still feels big and wild and raw. There's a lot of these little jewels sitting out there that not a lot of people know about. They bring you closer to something bigger than yourself.
Discover why Academy Award-winning director and climber Jimmy Chin still calls Wyoming home. And plan your adventure at travelwyoming.com.
Everyone, welcome to the first TSFP of the new year. Happy New Year, welcome along. We're going to be here for the next 52 weeks talking about Spanish football. Hopefully you can come along for the ride. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, Philip. How are you? Happy New Year.
I'm all right. You don't have to say Happy New Year to me. I've been speaking to you all day for the last I should have played along, maybe, but anyway. Happy New Year, Sid, yes. Yeah. Great to speak to you. How have you been?
I've been at football matches.
Yeah, I know how you've been. You have been at lots of football matches. There have been games over this weekend. The final match of 2021 took place at Mestalla on New Year's Eve, and it saw Espanyol record their first away win of the season. They beat Valencia by 2-1, two late goals as well, to turn things round. Then things kicked off the new year in stunning fashion by Getafe beating Real Madrid 1-0 at the Coliseum Alfonso Perez on Sunday. Enes Unal with an early goal. And that was it. That was enough for Getafe, the lowest scoring team in La Liga, to beat leaders Real Madrid. Champions Atletico then ended their run of four consecutive defeats by beating Rayo Vallecano by 2-0 at the Wanda Metropolitano. There was a goalless draw played out between Elche and Granada, a 1-1 draw between Alaves and La Real in the first match in charge of Alaves for José Luis Mendilibar, and Celta produced a really massive win at the Estadio Benito Villamarín to beat high-flying Betis 2-0, both goals scored by the mighty Barry Aspas. Then Sunday night saw Barcelona head to the island of Mallorca with barely any players. They had a load of COVID cases, some injuries, some suspensions, but they still managed to grind out a 1-0 win against Mallorca. We're recording the pod on Monday night. There are three games which haven't been played. Villarreal against Levante, which is a local derby. Osasuna against Athletic Club, which is a Basque-ish derby. And definitely Andalus derby between Cadiz and Sevilla. We've already had lots of new patrons joining us for 2022. Thank you. Great to have you on board. Last year, our patrons got 64 bonus podcasts, 40 Q&A podcasts, 14 episodes of TSFP Presents, and 177 morning paper reviews, plus our monthly Zoom calls, access to the thriving TSFP Discord. Come and join us, patreon.com/TSFP. It's €4 a month. It's good value if you like Spanish football. Sydney, you were at a couple of games on Sunday, weren't you?
I was.
Let's talk about them both, starting off with Getafe beating Real Madrid by that goal to nil. Real Madrid's first league defeat in 3 months. They hadn't lost since they went down against Espanyol. And Carlo Ancelotti, very elegantly, absolutely sort of destroyed his players, but in the most sort of calm, elegant, nice fashion by saying they were still on holiday. Were they?
I think that's slightly overplaying it. I understand his point. I think he's broadly right in that there was a kind of, I don't know what to call it. I suppose you could, I don't want to call it lazy because I don't like the phrase lazy because I don't think players are actually lazy as such. But maybe a bit lethargic, maybe a little bit sluggish, that it wasn't particularly quick, the performance from them. On a pitch that seemed to me to be slightly dry, which often happens, I think, with a 2 o'clock game because it had been watered, but maybe it slows a little bit. But the reason why I say I think it overplays it because is because I think for about half an hour in the first half, they were quite good. Certainly until they went a goal down. The ball was moved reasonably well. They made two or three reasonably good chances. I didn't think that they were terrible by any means, but there was a sort of a little bit of electricity missing. I think that part of that, though, is about Getafe. And I know that, obviously, inevitably, what happens is the focus all goes on Real Madrid, and I think Ancelotti's got a point in saying that. But I think it's also about the type of team they're playing against. You look at Real Madrid's games where they've struggled this year, and it's tended to be against this kind of team. The team that gives them the ball, the team that plays a little bit deeper, the team that waits for them a little bit, that asks them to play in a way that means they haven't got space to run into, in particular, of course, in the absence of Vinicius. And I thought, actually, Getafe handled that really quite well.
They did. And they are completely rejuvenated under Quique Sanchez Flores, aren't they? Remember, Getafe lost each of their opening seven games of the season. They got a draw in the eighth one and then sacked Mitchell. Since Quique Sanchez Flores has taken over, they've been, as we said, rejuvenated.
It's 1 point out of a potential 20... What did you say it was? Eight games? 24?
Yeah.
24. For Mitchell. And then it's 17 points from a potential 33 for Quique Sanchez Flores. Quique Sanchez Flores, if there was a league table just of the results since he's been in charge, Getafe would currently be fifth, when of course they were bottom when he was when he was brought in. Now, in an attempt to kind of contextualise a little bit some of these results, I think you do probably have to talk about kind of key moments, how unfortunate that Getafe team was. And we kept on saying, didn't we, at the start of the season, there's no way this lot are the worst team in Spain. And yet there they were, bottom of the table and by quite a long way. I think what Quique Sanchez Flores has done, in a way, has been pragmatic. I think it has been to reimpose some of the things that Bordalas did, which was neatly summed up in the song at the weekend. I don't know if you heard it. I really quite like this from Getafe fans, who used to sing Bordalas, te quiero, I love you, Bordalas. And this weekend they were singing Bordalas, te quise, I used to love you, Bordalas, but now I love Quique Sanchez Flores.
Yeah.
And I think there's an element of that. I think there's an element of kind of going back to what they did. I think if you look at some of the results, it hasn't always been pretty. And I'm in particular, I'm drawn to the game I was at away at Granada when they actually conceded a 97th minute equaliser. But they were fortunate that it took that long. You know, Granada should have absolutely blown them out way before that. And the one that really strikes me is, remember after the Mallorca game when Jaume Costa was saying that at one point he complained to the linesman about the constant fouling from Getafe. And the linesman said, and this is according to Jaume Costa, of course, he said, the linesman said to me, they're very clever like that. And I'm like, it's not clever. You give them a yellow card and it stops. You know, it's up to you to prevent this. But I think, look, you know, a lot of what they've done is good. I think they have found, through results and also through a kind of a more defensive approach, through a kind of more collective approach, bit by bit, they've found their feet. They've now only lost one of the last nine games. They've not lost in six. They've only lost one in nine. And they're just not conceding goals. And so bit by bit, they're starting to get results that now mean they are, I think it's 5 points off, 5 points off the bottom, I believe, and five places off the bottom as well. I think they're two or three places out of the relegation zone. And it looks very good for them.
Yeah, looking good for Getafe. Back to Real Madrid and the starting 11 selected by Carlo Ancelotti. There was one glaring omission.
Yeah.
Eden Hazard. Everybody thought that he was going to start the game, and so did he as well.
Yes, it did make me laugh a little bit, and I realised that I shouldn't laugh at this because it's an easy mistake that anyone could make, because it's not even really a mistake. But the headline on the front of AS on Sunday morning was, New Year, New Life, Eden Hazard starts again. And I always think that, look, it's one thing getting the team wrong, but I would never, ever, ever lead a newspaper with it, because you've always got a chance that you'll get it wrong. And Ancelotti doesn't really surprise us very often with his starting 11s. You can normally predict his team. And I think it's very interesting that Hazard didn't play at the point at which, probably more than any other point in this season, it was logical for him to start.
Yes.
More than any other game, except maybe the opening games of the season when we didn't yet know how good Vinicius was going to be. So Vinicius is out, obviously Bale is out, you've got Rodrigo and Asensio who you know, you can play them both, but you wouldn't normally think he's going to. So it was set up for Hazard to start, and he didn't. And Ancelotti was asked about it, and he said something which I think, on the face of it, is just a managerial cliche, but I just wonder if it contained a message. In that he said, basically, words to the effect of, well, of course, I look at the players in training and choose the ones who I think look best. And I just wondered if that was slightly pointed. And I don't know if it's possible that I'm reading too much between the lines there. But I wonder if he just looked at it and thought, well, actually, you know what? No, these two deserve to start, and maybe Hazard deserves slightly less to start.
Was there perhaps a tactical reason for it?
On the face of it, I wouldn't say so. Partly, of course, that's borne out by the fact that Hazard came on. And because I don't think that it would have surprised him to see Getafe play a deeper game, to play a game where they largely waited for
just
Real Madrid.
Maybe with the wing backs though, and
yeah, maybe
so important for Getafe, they get forward quite a lot, so having someone who tracks back like Rodrigo,
maybe he thought about that, but I would have imagined that you anticipate a game where you haven't got the space to run into, so two wingers who run into space, Rodrigo and Asensio. Or a winger who's very good in tight spaces. Well, you would say the winger in tight spaces, wouldn't you? In theory, at least.
And that was
borne out in the second half, although, of course, you never know. Maybe the second half would have been different with a different first half and so on. So it's possible. But it felt more like a comment on his own squad than on the opponents.
It's not a catastrophe for Real Madrid.
No, not at all. Not in the slightest.
In 3 months, they're still 8 points clear at the top of the table. However, Sevilla got two games in hand. Win those two games, and it's
can I be a massive cynic at this point?
Please
watch Sevilla fail to win these two games now.
Okay, well, because a lot of people are going to be listening to this podcast on Tuesday.
Exactly,
morning,
and I'm already going to look stupid. Yeah, I don't necessarily mean fail to win both of them. I mean between the two of them, fail to win one of them to not really get very close to Real Madrid. Because I did mean only one of the two, or I didn't necessarily mean both. It's just one of those things that you kind of feel with this Sevilla team, as we've talked about a lot, that when that step is there, you're just not 100% sure they're going to make it. I really hope they do, because I hope we get a really good open title race. And I do think Sevilla are a genuinely good side.
Okay, that's Real Madrid. Current champions Atletico beating Rayo by 2-0. You left the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez to go up to the Wanda where you'd left your car. You got up very early, Sydney, on Sunday, didn't you? You drove all the way to the Wanda. You left your car at the Wanda. Then you made a massive journey back to Getafe, which is actually quite close to your house. And then you went back from Getafe to the Wanda and then back home. An extraordinary act of journalistic dedication.
I was sitting on the metro doing the very, very long route from northeast, basically, to southwest of the city, kind of trundling across the city. Thinking, I can't. At one point, you're right. At one point, I was basically going past the metro station that's the nearest one to my house, at least of the underground metro stations, because there's like a little light railway one that goes closer to my house. And I was going past that last one, thinking, I can't believe I've spent an hour and a half getting back to more or less where I started. And you know what? The other thing that really struck me, because I don't do this very often, that Metro Sur sort of extension bit for those southern satellite towns, Fuenlabrada, Getafe, Leganes, and so on, Mostoles. Is incredibly slow, because of course the distance between the stations is much, much bigger than the distance in the cities. So you look at that metro map and you think, oh, it's only seven stops. Seven stops are a long time.
Transport chat. It's the new feature on TSFP. Anyway, you made it from the Coliseum to the Wanda to see Atletico beat Rayo. Atleti really, really, really needed this win. It always felt like, I don't know, maybe I was just being a sort of pessimistic Rayo fan, but I always felt like Rayo were never going to win this game. They're terrible away from home. They've had loads of COVID cases as well. Atleti desperately needed to win. It almost felt... I never, ever envisaged anything other than a comfortable Atletico win, and so prove the case.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I agree with you. I think Atletico would do themselves a disservice if they believe that this is a sign of turning the corner. I think Rayo are a good team, but you're right, away from home they haven't been. They had one of the two central defenders out. Oscar Trejo only came on as a substitute. They had half of the Garcias missing, the two Garcias. They had they played Unai López off the front. It wasn't a kind of a recognisable side. Falcao came on late on and actually got really nice ovation, which you'd expect from the Metropolitano. And I agree with you. I don't think this was ever likely to be anything other than not necessarily a comfortable win, but a win for Atleti.
Both goals scored by Angel Correa. We've spoken a lot about this player on the podcast over the last 2 years. He's been very important. He continues to be very important for Atletico Madrid. And even more so with Luis Suarez's ongoing goal drought. It's 9 games now since he last scored a league goal. By far and away his longest goal drought in Spain since arriving in 2014. But at least they've got Correa to score.
Yeah, and Correa is... I mean, we've talked about how he can be this player that's both brilliant and awful in exactly the same move sometimes. He'll sometimes turn someone, do an amazing turn, and then kind of lose control of the ball. That said, I think in a way, what I've just said is an old conversation. It feels like for the last 10 months or so, that hasn't been the case. It feels like from around about, what would you say, maybe February of last year, been consistently really quite good. And I think he's pretty unfortunate, actually, to have played rather less this season than he might have expected. Obviously, look, there's an inescapable fact, which is that he's not really a number nine. So maybe he's not competing with Suarez or Cunha for a place. And then if you're looking for the second striker, well, he's competing with João Félix and Griezmann now, which is obviously even harder. If you're looking even for a midfielder, then that brings even more players into play that you could say he's more or less competing with. Possibly Carrasco, although not really, although Carrasco did play on the right this weekend rather than the left. Possibly Lemar, but not really. But there's lots of people who, if you write down a list of who are the good Atletico players, there are lots of people who are better than him, who are higher on that list.
Yeah.
And yet then you think about the actual productivity and you think about the actual contribution. And you know what? He jumps a lot of places in that list. And so it's a very difficult one to properly put your finger on as to what's the best way of managing this. And I suppose in a way the answer is you've got to bite the bullet and bench some people that you might not normally want to bench.
Luis Suarez.
Well, to be honest, we said this at the start of the season, didn't we? We said that we felt like the ultimate end game here is that Griezmann's the number nine. excuse me. It now feels a little bit like the ultimate end game might be Cunha as the number nine, not Griezmann. I actually thought Suarez played okay this weekend in terms of his link-up play, in terms of his ability to have people play off him. And I think he likes playing with Correa. I think he likes playing with Correa more than he likes playing with others. But yeah, it does feel, doesn't it, like the natural progression of this is probably Suarez. And yet then you look at the scoring charts, and despite this ludicrously long drought, he's still got more than anyone else. I mean, so I it's kind of hard to feel like the logical end game here, yeah, is that Suarez ends up not playing.
Also, possibly not playing again for Atletico Madrid is Kieran Trippier. You saw him applauding the fans at the end of the match out on his own on the pitch. Was it a farewell?
I think it probably was. I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Why is he going? To Newcastle?
I mean,
no disrespect Newcastle. You know, great club. I'm sure the city's nice. Never been, but...
Oh, the city's really... I actually really Newcastle as a city. It's definitely got cold, character. Sure a little bit, nice. Yeah, a bit character. A bit cold for you, definitely.
Bit cold, but sure.
On the face of it, this is baffling because, you know, you are looking at saying... And again, as you say, with the greatest respect, Newcastle in theory are beginning a project... I've used that word. Beginning a new era where I think they will sign a lot of players, where they will become a stronger team, where I think they've got a very good manager now. I don't know how clear their plans will be because it's very early to see that. But the very fact that they've gone for Trippier, I think, suggests something about the kind of players they want, because Trippier is not an immediately glamorous player or an exciting player. And to be honest, if you're a team fighting relegation, Trippier is useful, but he's not a player that's going to drag the whole team out of the relegation zone on his own. That's just not what he does. And so on the face of it, it's a bit bizarre because you sort of think, well, you're turning down Champions League football for a team that's fighting for survival. Now, probably will survive, but who knows? Let's see who else they sign.
Really?
Exactly, depending on who they sign. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm making the assumption now that Trippier is not the only one, that they sign two or three players who do really make a difference, even if it's not enough of a difference to say suddenly Newcastle are good, but Newcastle are good enough to not go down.
Okay.
And obviously, the salary will be absolutely enormous. Because, of course, when you're the first man in for a big project like this, you are being convinced by the economics as much as the other thing. I think there's another thing in this, which is I think a sense that Trippier, who wanted to go to Manchester United in the summer, has already kind of got in his mind that he's halfway out anyway. So I think it makes it easier to make this decision. I think there is a sense of him, and he actually said this in an interview I did with him whenever it was 3 or 4 months ago, he kind of used the phrase, not quite, but very nearly used the phrase, you know, I came here to do a thing and I've done it, just to win the league and get myself back on track and prove it. And he was very open in that interview about going back to the Premier League, even though he said he was happy here. I think that there's a slight...
I think then he was probably thinking he was going to Manchester United.
Well, that's the thing. Yes, that's the thing. Absolutely. No, you're right. Absolutely. I think there's a slight disconnect now between him and Atletico Madrid at some level that I can't fully put my finger on. Although when I posed this question, I was speaking to people at the club on Sunday after the game, I posed this question to a couple of them. They were like, no, No, there's absolutely no doubt that Simeone wants him to stay. I said, yeah, but you might get loads of money for this. No, absolutely, because not halfway through the season. This isn't good for anyone. He is basically the only right back. You've got Vasalico, but you know, he is your first choice right back, albeit it may well be that Llorente ends up playing there. And I tell you what, Llorente will be desperate for him to stay because he's 100% their right back if Trippier goes. And I just think it's a real pity. Obviously, look, ultimately, Kieran has to make up his mind and take the decision that he wants. And Simeone said this afterwards. He said, look, I want him to stay. He's an extraordinary player, but the player decides. And when I'd asked him
Well, the player decides, and also we don't know. You know, there might be family matters.
Exactly. That's what I mean. That's why this is one of the things I say. There is something there that we can't quite put our finger on, I think, that helps to explain it. It isn't all of it, but helps to explain it, yeah.
Going back to the 80s, remember John Aldridge at Real Sociedad, came to Real Sociedad, lived in San Sebastian, did really well with the team. It was going fantastically, but his wife never settled and wanted to...
Well, and in particular, his daughter wasn't happy.
His daughter wasn't happy
at school, and he didn't want to stay. And he did come out and say that, and who knows, maybe Trippier will say something. I hope as well that just, you know, however this ends now, it ends well, if you see what I mean, that Trippier kind of handles this in a way that says, listen, this has been fantastic, thank you so much, and that kind of he gets the I think he will be recognised as having been a really, really good player for them.
Okay, let's move on and talk about Barcelona's win at Mallorca. Now, Sydney, I can feel a rant building.
Can you? Which one?
There was certainly a rant on WhatsApp.
Oh, there was, yes, there was, you're right, yeah, sorry, I was trying to remember what rant this was. Yeah, I just basically...
It's about Luke de Jong.
I mean...
And you feel he deserves more respect.
Look, I know that the respect is a respect is kind of a nonsense phrase, really, which players actually throw out a bit too often, in my opinion. I think
he scored the winning goal for Barca, by the way. Yeah, he played pretty well.
I played pretty well. An amazing overhead kick against the bar. He had a shot against the post where he was stretching for it. And I don't particularly like turning to the respect thing because, as I say, I think it's an easy get out that footballers come up with, which I actually think sometimes they do, and it's very facile, or lack of respect. And I think mostly it's bollocks. It's not a lack of respect. But in his case, I think it has been a bit. And the reason I say this is because I feel like the limitations that Luke de Jong has, or the stylistic type of player that he is, has, I think, led to a kind of idea that he's just not a footballer. And I think that speaks, obviously, to the kind of, the puritanical approach sometimes that surrounds Barcelona in terms of the way that not so much the club, although sometimes there's an element of that, but the way that the media responds and some fans respond to it. I think there's been an attack on Luke de Jong as if he's somehow doing something wrong, which I think has overlooked the fact that he came incredibly cheaply. He's on loan, remember. He came, why would he ever not say he wanted to go to Barcelona? He came very specifically with Ronald Koeman saying he comes to do something different to our other players, which is true, and he can do those things. It's not his fault that Koeman's gone. He has at no point let anybody down, except per the limitations that he's got. And, you know, we talked about it early in the season. There was that moment in a very early game. It might even have been the very first game. It might have been Real Sociedad the opening day, where the ball is put through the gap for him, and it looks like he's going backwards. Well, we know he's not quick. You know, and I'm not saying it's great that he's not quick. Of course, it would be wonderful if he was super quick. But and I just sort of feel like the line has been crossed quite a lot with him.
Can I read you some quotes from him that we had from La Liga?
Yeah,
TV
please do, because I saw a glimpse of that, and it's very interesting. I'm really glad he spoke to you as well. Yeah, go on.
We had him on our post-match show, and he said he was asked if he'd ever felt sort of mistreated by the club, and he said, "No, I've never felt mistreated. Everyone's always been honest to me. I know my situation. I know where I come from. I'll just keep working hard in training, and if the coach needs me, I'll be ready." He came across incredibly well.
Yeah, he's really
in that
good
interview.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, look, I'm partly biased in this insofar as, you know, I'm drawn to players who express themselves well, who don't appear to have any arrogance about them. And I've always felt that he speaks well like that. And I like that. And look, you know, Barcelona, I should make this point, by the way, I don't want anyone to think it's a rant that way around. Barcelona are absolutely within their rights to decide, particularly with a new manager who wants a different style, that he doesn't fit, and to try and find a solution to that. And so long as that doesn't become nasty in terms of briefing against him, which I think is starting to happen against Dembélé, by the way, and happens quite often, and all clubs do it, or nearly all clubs do it, so long as it doesn't reach that point, then fine.
Luke de Jong was the match winner against Mallorca. There have been lots of other things that are happening off the pitch for Barcelona. Today we had Ferran Torres' presentation, and obviously exciting, a really talented young player coming to La Liga and coming to Barcelona. The president was there, Joan Laporta, and he was in ebullient form, as he always tends to be.
Yeah.
I'm going to read verbatim.
Oh, please do. Yeah, I want to hear this, actually, in its fullity. In its entirety, even.
It's a tweet from friend of the pod Dermot Corrigan, who says Laporta was asked if Barcelona are now able to sign top players like Haaland. He replies, "Everybody should get ready as we're back as big players in the market." Didn't really clarify how.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I mean, I do love. I mean, I quite enjoy Laporta's bullishness, and I think it's not a bad thing for Barcelona at times. But it has to be tempered, and it has to be. You know.
Well, they're not going to sign Haaland, but they might sign Morata.
Well, they're certainly not going to sign Haaland now. I mean, in a way, I wondered if what he was trying to say was, you know, the summer is perhaps different. And of course, the summer is perhaps different because one way or the other, the Dembélé situation is resolved. By then, maybe you feel that you're optimistic enough that Coutinho goes. By then, you get your €40 million for Antoine Griezmann, unless there's some sort of deal there done that involves Morata. By then, maybe you do feel like you have the mechanics to make this happen and to comply with financial fair play. But I think it's interesting. I thought a couple of really, really interesting things were said this week, by the way, before this weekend's game. Mm-hmm. One of them was Xavi admitting, which I thought was extraordinary, on the eve of the Mallorca game, that the registering of Ferran Torres depended on Dembélé's contract renewal. In other words, Dembélé's contract renewal involves some mechanism by which some of his money was being postponed or reduced to make room for Ferran Torres. And so essentially you're in Dembélé's hands to register Ferran Torres. He also, Matteo Alemán admitted today that the Demir situation has an impact on this as well. Because if he plays another game, there's a contractual need to change his contract and to increase it. I must admit, I've now forgotten the exact way in which that works. But basically, he admitted that was part of it as well, which is why Demir is now not playing, because you can't afford for him to have another game. And so for Barcelona to be in this position where, again, it feels like their hands are tied, does make you, at the very least, a bit dubious about what Laporta is saying. You know, we're back, baby, doesn't really feel like a plausible message at the moment.
Extraordinary article written in Sport, the Catalan Sport Daily, about Dembélé. I mean,
it's awful.
An article. It's an opinion piece on Dembélé. It's an character assassination on Dembélé. It's really quite nasty.
I mean, look, some of the things that are pointed out by Casanovas, who writes it, I think you can point out. And I think you can point out in different language. That's the thing.
It's the tone.
It's the tone and the viciousness and the, if you like, the gratuitousness of it that makes it. It's really horrible. I mean, let's go back to De Jong. As far as I know, De Jong's never confronted that kind of language. But yeah, I just thought it was. I thought it was quite grim, to be honest.
Really was. I can understand why Barcelona fans and members of the club might be frustrated, annoyed, angry with Dembélé, but. Yeah, not really any need for that. Let's see what happens with Dembélé. Let's see what happens with Morata. The word on the street is that it's actually pretty close to having Alvaro Morata to Barcelona. So watch this space.
My feeling with Morata is, just one thing very briefly just to say, my concern with Morata is that it always feels to me like this is a really good player who never quite finds happiness and is always looking for it. And so my question mark with this would be, how long does this last?
Yeah, you seem to have genuine emotional concerns about Alvaro Morata. Every time he joins a club, you're sort of trying to get into his head and sort of thinking how he's feeling. And it's I guess that's the characteristic of Alvaro Morata, is that you're not necessarily convinced of his, I don't want to say mental strength, but sort of ability to deal with certain situations.
Exactly. There's a very good a good column on this by Iñaco Díaz-Guerra in El Mundo today, which he talks about Morata as being like a work colleague that he used to have that would turn up and be really good and then would sort of think, this isn't quite what I wanted.
Yeah.
And then we'll be looking for somewhere else. There's a degree of that, and it's not always easy to put your finger on why.
We did talk about Morata in the bonus pod last week. Before we go, we have to mention Barry Aspas's two goals for Celta. This is an extraordinary result for Celta Vigo. Betis, who are third in the table, they've had a fantastic calendar year. they were more or less at full strength. Betis missing a couple of players through COVID, but no one really central to their plans. Celta had a really makeshift back four. They had Okai and Dominguez playing at centre back, with Aidu playing at right back. If those names don't necessarily ring a bell, they're not playing in their positions. Let's put it like that.
Yeah.
And they managed to keep a clean sheet against Betis. And Barry managed to score two goals. One was a penalty, which was pretty much a joke, should never have been given, but he took it very nicely. And the second goal is fantastic as well. Yes, there is a defensive cock-up from Betis, but he took it so well. And oh, he's just everything to this Celta. Barry is life, Sydney.
Barry is life. Yeah.
You watched the way he plays.
Absolutely,
it's just
with
invigorating.
You. Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. He is life. He's there's a lovely bit as well post-game where he's speaking with that fantastic deep voice that he's got. And
with the sing-song Galician accent.
Yeah, sort of sing-song Galician accent, but a deep voice. And, you know, this is Barry Aspas, who has, as Michu always puts it, Barry Aspas, who has the tin chest, like a suit of armour, that sort of little sort of sticking out scrappy-doo chest of his.
Yeah.
And, you know, he looks like a man who should have a squeaky voice, not a man who should have this. Anyway, he's life-giving. But it was a lovely bit post-game. And I only caught it, you know, half-listening. And so it's possible I've got this slightly wrong, but basically he was saying that Nolito always says to him, oh, let's get the books out again and look at your stats.
Yes,
and he goes, and at the end of every year, I've done what I always do, which is brilliant.
He's up to 10 league goals for the season now, Barry. One behind Juanmi in terms of who's going to be the top Spanish scorer in La Liga. And yeah, big up, Barry. Just want to say that. If there's something that we didn't talk about, let us know. Send us a question. We will answer it in tomorrow's Q&A pod. Before we go, the Segunda División leaders Almeria were beaten 1-0 at home by Cartagena. Eibar are now just 3 points behind them in second. They beat Real Sociedad B by 3-2. Valladolid are third. They beat Leganés 1-0. Tenerife, Ponferradina and Girona make up the other playoff places, although Tenerife lost the Canary Islands derby 1-0 to Las Palmas on Sunday. The winning goal scored for Las Palmas by a Tinerfeño, a guy from Tenerife, so that wouldn't have gone down very well as well. Ponferradina were beaten 2-0 on Friday by the mighty Real Oviedo.
That was Real Oviedo in a nutshell, wasn't it? So you play a game before everyone else plays, you get in the playoff place, everyone goes, oh, that's hopeful, and then of course by the end of the weekend you are where you always are, which is 8th or 9th and a couple of points off.
Absolutely, just prepare yourself for it. Okay, don't get your hopes up. You don't have to get your hopes up for the Copa del Rey this week because Real Oviedo were knocked out nice and early. But the round of 32 kicks off on Tuesday. Some potential highlights include Linares Deportivo from the small town of Linares in the province of Jaén in the region of Andalusia against Barcelona, and then a familiar looking fixture, Alcoyano against Real Madrid. Yep, that Alcoyano that knocked them out last season at this stage with a 2-1 win in extra time. Atletico Mancha Real against Athletic Club and Rayo Majadahonda against Atletico Madrid. A game which has been moved to the Wanda Metropolitano. Sydney's not happy about it. I'm not going to let you vent, Sydney.
No, don't let me, because
you're,
I'll be
so
here all
angry.
Night.
We'll leave it. If anyone's interested into why Sydney's so furious about this, ask us on the Q&A pod. Thanks very much for listening. Happy New Year. Come join us on patreon.com/TSFP. And if you don't worry, we'll be here next week as ever. Adios.
Cheerio.